from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Big American retailers have their eye and more on the big money in American healthcare. Traditional drugstores like Walgreens and CVS are now offering an exploding menu of healthcare services around the corner from deodorant and eyeliner. Target and Walmart are in the game, too. What happens when a big chunk of American healthcare moves to the store? How much will move? Is this wave working? This hour on Point, big retailers in healthcare services, what it means for the old doctor's office and for you. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you getting your everyday healthcare at the strip mall at Walmart? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Do the old drugstores want you to come in for healthcare services? You bet they do. Here's an ad from CVS.
You never know when someone in the family is going to get sick.
Breakfast!
So it's good to know there's MinuteClinic, the medical clinic in CVS Pharmacy. Our nurse practitioners provide quality care every day with no appointment necessary and most insurance accepted. MinuteClinic, the medical clinic in CVS Pharmacy.
And why do people come in? Here's Ed Warzeka talking with Massachusetts WWLP Channel 22 News, explaining why he used the MinuteClinic.
I think especially for someone like myself, working a regular 9 to 5, 9 to 7 schedule gives me that opportunity to come a little later in the day around 8 p.m. to get the services that I need.
Head down to the corner store, and for an awful lot of healthcare services, there they are. Joining me now is Sumati Reddy, Wall Street Journal staff reporter and columnist covering consumer health. Sumati Reddy, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
How many of these now out there, and what big chains are sporting them?
So there's about 1,600. They are growing 25 to 30% a year, expected to double in number in the next few years. The main player is the one you mentioned, MinuteClinic, which are in CVS stores. There are about 800, and they're expecting to open 150 this year.
And give us a sense of the range of services that they now offer at CVS, Walgreens. What can they do for you?
Pretty much anything. I mean, it's a very wide variety of things, everything from vaccinations to sports and camp physicals to diabetes, if you want to get your cholesterol taken or your diabetes managed. It's really the whole, the whole gamut of things.
I mean, I have to say I've seen the signs for flu shots because everybody pushes those, but I had no idea of the range of services. I mean, all kinds of vaccinations here, including hepatitis and, of course, tetanus, but shingles and meningitis and right on. Minor injuries, burns and jellyfish stings, pink eye, sinus infections, strep throat, strep tests. When I look down this list and it's long, here's ringworm and, impetigo. I mean, it looks like the list that would make up quite a large percentage of typical doctor's office visits.
Yeah, which obviously is of concern to physicians and physician groups, and some of them have expressed these concerns. Most recently, the pediatrics group came out with some guidelines saying this is sort of, disrupting the physician-patient relationship, and you should really be going to your pediatrician instead of the clinic when you can.
Who tends to be there when you come into one of these quick retail clinics? Who's on duty?
Who's on duty? Okay, so it's almost always a nurse practitioner.
Not a doctor.
No, never a doctor, really. I've never been to a clinic. I don't think I've heard of any clinics that have doctors on staff. They do have medical directors, so if a nurse has a question, there's always someone they can call, a doctor they can call. But I think that happens pretty rarely. I mean, most of these nurse practitioners are sort of trained and equipped to deal with the things they're doing.
Do you need appointments, or how does it work?
No, it's all walk-in. So, it's interesting. I spent a day in one, and there, sometimes the waits can be over an hour because typically they're seeing patients for 20 minutes. So if you have four people ahead of you, you're going to be waiting more than an hour.
So it's convenient if there's not a big long line.
Exactly. But it's funny because one woman I talked to said, I'm like, well, okay, well, are you a little upset that you have to wait, more than 45 minutes? And she said, no, I expected that. It's a walk-in clinic. She's like, when I go to the doctor's office, I have an appointment and I still have to wait more than 45 minutes.
Right. And you go through the rigmarole of getting the appointment. What about costs for the patient?
They accept most of the people that go to these clinics do have insurance. They accept almost all insurances. And actually, the insurance companies, I think, like it because, these places are very protocol-driven. They're very cost-sensitive. So they're not, they're not ordering a whole bunch of follow-up tests that are going to sort of annoy the insurance company.
And I'm looking down here. This is the CVS list showing all their services. And beside each one there, right in black and white, is a price. I mean, diabetes screening, $59. Camp physical, $39. New price, exclamation mark. This is very, very transparent pricing compared to a traditional doctor's office visit.
Yes, exactly. So even if you don't have insurance, you're typically paying $79 to $99 for whatever you're getting done there. So a lot of people, it isn't so bad.
If I could see what traditional doctor's offices were charging for these services, are these comparable prices or are these lower prices than in the traditional system?
That's a good question. I mean, studies have shown that they're typically 30 to 40%, I think it is, less costly than going to a doctor's office or an emergency department or some other place.
What's the business incentive for these big companies to get into this, Sumathi?
Yeah, that's a great question. I noticed when I was spent a day at a Minute Clinic that usually when they diagnose someone with something, they would then walk them down the aisle and point out all the products that might help them, the nasal spray, the sore throat spray. And these people were typically buying them, and, you know, sometimes they were pointing out the CVS brand. So I do think that, you know, there's a lot of probably sales of these things are increasing. Of general items, you know, medical and unmedical.
So in a way, they may be a salesperson as well as a medical staffer there. Are they prescribed, because these are drugstores, they make money from prescriptions and drugs, are they prescribing more? I mean, I'm looking here, you're quoting one of these nurse practitioners says, you know, looks like flu, we're going to get you started on Tamiflu. Whether you use Tamiflu or not is sometimes not an easy decision. Are they prescribing more drugs because they sell drugs?
I mean, there was some concerns about, particularly with antibiotics and the problems with antibiotic resistance. So there might be an overprescribing of antibiotics, but the studies have found that there was not an overprescribing of antibiotics. In terms of prescriptions, though, I mean, they do say you don't have to get it here. You can go to any pharmacy you want. But, of course, naturally, everyone will get it there because why wouldn't they?
It's once you're sitting there. How does it interact with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare? Does that make a difference to these companies, to the prevalence of this, to the projected growth of these?
Well, the experts I've talked to said because more people are insured, there's more pressure, you know, at the primary care level. So sort of the wait times and getting in will be harder and harder because there's more demand to get in to see a primary care physician. So that could sort of, the spillover effect would go, you know, people will be going to these retail clinics possibly instead.
And they've been around for a while. Is the growth what they anticipated? Has this taken off as these big companies hoped or expected when they got going?
You know, I think initially they weren't doing, they started to grow when they first started, I guess, more than a decade ago, and then they kind of leveled off and they weren't growing at all. And then in the past few years, they picked up again because of, I think people relate that to the Obamacare and the fact that more people are getting insured and they need other options. And now that most of these clinics do accept insurance, you know, it's made growth a little easier.
So do we have something transformative going on here? And what are the medical implications? We're going to look at all that. Sumathi Reddy with The Wall Street Journal in New York. Sumathi, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thanks so much.
With us now from Stanford, California, is Dr. Jason Wong. He's co-founder, chief medical officer of Polkadoc. It's a California-based healthcare startup originating prescriptions online. He's the author of Innovator's Prescription, a disruptive solution for healthcare. In December, he wrote Why Retail Clinics Failed to Transform Healthcare on the Harvard Business Review's blog. Dr. Wong, Jason Wong, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So is this on the upswing or is this a failed experiment? I'm hearing both things here today.
And I think you're right. It is both things. It's a very attractive model to consumers because of the convenience and added affordability that these retail clinics can bring. On the other hand, there are a lot of barriers to entry and growth that exist in the healthcare system, which is, of course, as many of us have experienced, is a very highly regulated environment. And that has created some difficulties for retail clinics to continue to grow.
I mean, what kind of barriers? I'm looking, I mean, all you have to do is sort of curtain off a corner of the store, get a nurse practitioner, and it looks like you're in business. And I'm looking at quite a long list of services offered. It doesn't look like a highly constricted list, or is it?
Well, the list of conditions actually, for example, in the state of Massachusetts, is highly regulated in terms of what retail clinics are actually allowed to service. And several other things, such as the reimbursement, which is not set by the retail clinics, but by private insurers and CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So, for example, nurse practitioners working in these clinics are only allowed 85% the reimbursement amount that MDs are allowed for the exact same service. There is also legislation, for example, that has been passed that bans tobacco sales in any healthcare facility. And while on the surface that makes a lot of sense, it unfairly punishes, for example, the grocery stores and pharmacies that have these retail clinics.
Though it may well explain why some CVS First, I guess, is getting out of tobacco sales to get into this. If it was a wide open field, if they could move in and offer everything that seemed reasonable to you, Dr. Wong, how disruptive would this be for the American healthcare traditional system?
I think it would be highly disruptive because you have the retail clinics starting to look at introducing laboratory services. They already have the pharmacies and you have a provider there. And I think it could be a very integrated source for basic primary care services, a one-stop shop, if you will. And I think as more and more people realize that these clinics are right down the block, they don't have to set up appointments with their doctor's office 2 weeks in advance anymore.
Would that be good disruption on balance or bad disruption?
I guess it depends on your point of view. I think for consumers, it's certainly good because it offers a lot of choice. On the other hand, from the point of view of doctors, I think there's this great fear that it's introducing fragmentation into the system and what many fear is inferior care.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about big retailers, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, more, Target, moving into health care services delivery in the store and what that may come to mean for American health care. You can hear their come-ons all over the place. We heard CVS. Here's Walgreens saying, hey, come on over. Get your health care here.
Pharmacists out in the store, so it's easier to ask questions and get answers. A health guide to lead you to the right wellness solutions. Take Care Clinics with nurse practitioners to diagnose and treat your everyday health needs. Imagine that. Come in and discover the all-new Walgreens, putting well within reach.
With the Minute Clinics, Take Care Clinics right there saying, come on in at Walgreens, at CVS, hey, at Walmart, around the corner, down the aisle from tires and everything else they sell there. Dr. Jason Wong joins us from Stanford, California, co-founder, chief medical officer at Polkadot, California healthcare startup. Jason Wong, some response from our listeners here. Deirdre says, relationship with doctors don't exist like they used to anyway. Minute clinics make it easy, especially for people who never go to the doctor. There is that, you want to compare it with some kind of old-timey doctor relationship where you sit around and chew the fat and talk and have that doctor for years. But for many people, that's not out there anyway, Dr. Wong.
And I'd agree with that assessment. I think a lot of the doctors' associations are pushing for more of that longitudinal primary care that we expect, but in reality we haven't had that for decades, and I see few models other than retail clinics that make such a concerted effort to bring patients into the primary care system. If you see a retail clinic and you don't have a primary care doctor, retail clinics will connect you to a local primary care provider. They make an effort to send information to a primary care provider if you have one. And certainly that is more than what most doctor's offices will provide. And you can go to any other retail clinic in the same chain and they'll have your records. And that is, again, unlike what most of us experience in the rest of the medical field, where you can move from one doctor to another on the same block and they won't know what has happened down the street.
Is full medical doctor's time being wasted on a lot of this stuff anyway? I mean, on a cholesterol screening or pregnancy test or splinters, minor burns. I'm looking at things that they'll treat. This is on the CVS list here. Minor wounds and abrasions. Do you really need med school for that stuff?
You need some medical training, but whether or not you need an MD behind your name, I think that's debatable. And I think that's the pushback from physicians, which is that some of these conditions may impact other conditions, otherwise known as comorbidities, that you need to keep track of to make sure that there's something, not something else going on in the bigger picture. On the other hand, retail clinics have been very careful to limit their scope of practice to these types of conditions, which can be treated as one-off. And so in my opinion, I think it's perfectly fine for nurse practitioners to be dealing with these sorts of conditions and for physicians to spend their time on things that really require their expertise and experience.
Who does this end up servicing? I mean, I think part of the expectation was that these services at the corner drugstore would be there for people who had not had good access to health care. Has that turned out to be the case?
No, it hasn't. What we found is that the vast majority of patients accessing these retail clinics are already insured and come there because of convenience and not necessarily drawn by the affordability. Now, that said, I think there's still the potential to bring those patients in. But again, there are other models at work out there, even beyond retail clinics, such as telehealth and telemedicine, that could bring care even further into the mass audience.
Here's a listener who writes to us. SJ says, my family GP general practitioner spends 20 to 30 minutes with each of us in a standard exam, explains the results of every test, does this despite pressure from insurance companies to get a patient out in 10 minutes. I appreciate that depth of health care. This will never happen in a big box store. What do you say?
When you look at what physicians have to deal with in terms of time constraints and the bottom line in terms of revenue, I think most physician practices are under pressure to move away from that old model. In fact, the type of care that your listener describes is really the model of what is now regarded as concierge medicine, where you have to pay a little bit extra on the top to get that level of service. So I would consider that listener particularly fortunate.
I want to bring Dr. Reed Blackwelder into our conversation. He's president of the American Academy of Family Physicians. He's a family physician himself in Kingsport, Tennessee. Dr. Blackwelder, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Here, perhaps in the middle of your career, you see these big retailers coming in offering lots of services, you know, around the corner and down the aisle from Hallmark cards and deodorant. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think all of the things that are going on are a reaction to what has been a very dysfunctional healthcare system. As Dr. Huang and your message to your callers have indicated, there are a lot of problems with the current system. And what we really need to be working on is a major disruption of how we provide healthcare, which involves team-based care, in which all members are critical but not interchangeable. And in this fashion, I think the retail clinics are certainly an important part of the overall team in providing for our patients in order to improve their care, their satisfaction at decreased cost.
So let's go whole hog, throw off the traces and make this a new entry point for healthcare on a very large scale in this country?
Well, what we need is a lot of pieces to work together. Some really big risks with the current different models. There's a lot of fragmentation of care. There's siloing of care. People perhaps only getting their care in places like retail clinics or, of course, emergency rooms and others. A patient is being seen in one retail clinic, as we heard just a moment ago, they might have their records accessible by others in the system, but there are other retail clinics, other retail markets. And that's one of our biggest problems with all of the different silos that come up. There's really not connection between all of them. We need to have sort of seamless communication. We need to all learn how to be more transparent in what we do. We need to all work to continue to transform our practice. And I would actually say that the comment before about moving sort of away from that model of having time is actually against what the American Academy of Family Physicians is working toward. We're challenging our members to transform their practices into more effective patient-centered homes in which we explore asynchronous care, we take advantage of good technology, we make sure that we handle a lot of things outside of the appointment. So when we have that time, we are truly committed face-to-face to get all the benefits of that relationship. So I would say we're actually moving back toward that model after some time of losing it.
I mean, that sounds great, but it also sounds a bit aspirational, like you're talking about ideals, not reality. Many patients know that time pressure. You can feel it. And you talk about fragmentation and siloing. I have seen plenty of that in the traditional medical system.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that has to change. I think that's part of a lot of the disruption that's going on as patients look for other models. But as you heard from one of your callers a moment ago, it may be ideal, but it can also be real, that there are physicians, and I would I'm one of those myself. I give my patients the time they need, but I'm also trying not to take some of that important time up by things that could be done by other members of the team, which can be somebody in my office, but could also be a retail clinic or a place where that care is provided. We just need to make sure that as we all move forward with these different aspects of care, that there is better communication. That is a problem in all systems. Hospitals don't talk to retail clinics, don't talk to health departments, don't talk to physician offices. So that is one of the big things we need to work on to continue to improve the care of our patients.
Let's hear from a few of our listeners here. Jamie in Columbia, South Carolina. What do you think about all this? Jamie, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah. Basically, I like to go to the Minute Clinic because it's quick. You can get in, you can get out. I recently was diagnosed with strep, and I got in and out quickly and was on my way in 20, 30 minutes at the most, whereas sometimes when you make an appointment, you're there for several hours, and I don't have the time.
Do you worry, Jamie, that, you know, you wonder if you've got strep, that maybe there'd be something else going on, something more subtle, and the retail Minute Clinic person might miss it?
You know, honestly, it never crossed my mind. I'm a fairly healthy person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't really bother me at this point. I think if there was something bigger, then I would definitely go to a regular place.
Yeah, in and out, and it works for you, and waiting hours at the doctor's office after an appointment, not so fun. I appreciate your call, Jamie. Anne in Middlesex, Vermont. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just feel really strongly that I trust my doctor. My doctor knows my personal history, which is a bit complex, and I take a number of medications. If I were to just suddenly start taking some of my health issues to a pharmacy, am I supposed to be now keeping track of my history and telling my doctor what I had strep 6 months ago or whatever? I really completely want complete service from my doctor, because that's where I go. And she has a nurse practitioner. She has special, they have hours in their office,
yeah,
booked for people who want to just come in that day for maybe to be tested for strep or something.
So you're not willing to deal with the risk of fragmentation or a medical health service provider who doesn't know your whole story. And I appreciate your call. Jason Wong, what about it? Are you more likely to get that fully informed view at a traditional doctor's office? And you know, people might pop into a CVS, but then the next time might be a Walmart, next time a Walgreens, next time a Target. Is there any way to sew all that together?
Well, I think that's always been the fear of what retail clinics would do. But I think, we've seen retail clinics start to adopt the same electronic medical record systems, for example, that large health systems have. And so I think that challenge of addressing fragmentation and interoperability is being addressed. As we heard previously, the issue of fragmentation exists throughout the healthcare system.
Is Walmart going to share with Walgreens, Target with CVS? Will that ever happen? Data?
Under health IT standards of the United States, that will happen eventually. But you're right, for competitive reasons, it won't happen right off the bat. But again, that scenario exists across all health systems.
Jason Wong, Reed Blackwelder, Dr. Blackwelder, please stand by. Teen Hansen Turton joins us right now from Philadelphia. Teen is executive director of Convenient Care Association, the trade association for retail clinics. It includes Walgreens and CVS. Teen Hansen Turton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks for having us.
So, what do you think? What's the future here? There were great expectations when this first came on the scene, then kind of disappointment that it didn't go further, ran into a thicket of regulations. Do you see this continuing to grow aggressively as a new avenue for American healthcare?
So currently we have close to 1,700 clinics around the country in 39 states and growing in the Soils District of Columbia. We've served more than 20 million, and there's no doubt that this type of model is going to continue to grow and continue to work, with all of our healthcare partners in the country.
Are there more services in the works beyond the kind of flu shots and vaccinations and minor burns and scrapes treatment?
We have seen the last few years, and I would say, I would preface that this is really consumer-driven, and this is, as you heard from Jason, has been a consumer-driven movement in many ways, but we have seen the additional services, certainly in some chronic disease management, often, though, in partnerships with, you know, our medical colleagues and hospitals and health systems, for example, where, you know, we manage some of the chronic illness with them, and, you know, I think there's been a lot of discussion on this call around sort of making sure that there's communication, and absolutely in those situations there are communications. There's also, you know, systems talking to one another to make sure there's continuity of care and that, you know, somebody's physician on the other side can see that that person went to one of those clinics and for what care and, you know, what was actually prescribed.
Give us a sense of the more sophisticated end of services that are or might soon be available at these clinics. Like what? I mean, I even heard somebody say the other day maybe chemotherapy. Is that, how far does it go? Will it go?
The premise of the model is still, you know, basic healthcare services, what you can provide within a framework of a small space within a retail settings, but also within, you know, a time of 15 to 20 minutes. So some of those services you just mentioned may not, you know, the reality is that may not be, you know, what's, at least in these types of clinics, it's primarily on the primary care spectrums. And if we think about, you know, what's happening with the Affordable Care Act, for example, the biggest issue we all face, and I think Reed said it as well, is how do we assure that, you know, we get, you know, basic primary care services and prevention services to people. And our biggest challenge in this country, I think Jason mentioned it also, Reed, is that we have had for many years a physician shortage, especially in the primary care area. And this type of model is certainly in the retail clinics as a way to augment and support the challenges we've had in making sure people have access to basic primary care services and some chronic disease management services to make sure that they can, you know, be productive and also go to work and also be able to be seen in the mornings, you know, middays, maybe during the breaks, or in evenings and continue on with their lives and be productive.
I mean, it looks like your group people are still stretching out here. I'm looking at Walgreens' list. These are all labeled new, and it's monitoring and management for asthma, cardiovascular conditions, diabetes, emphysema, thyroid disorders. These don't sound like scrapes and minor burns, Teen.
These are, you know, those are services on the continuum in terms of the primary care field, and also services that consumers, and sort of if you think about it as a continuum, you know, we started out with some of the more basic healthcare services, but the reality is that 40% of people coming into these clinics may not have had a medical home, so we're connecting them to medical homes, but they also need, you know, ongoing services, and part of our work is to make sure that people have access to a primary care provider so they can also continue to get, you know, more, you know, I would say a little bit more in-depth services from their, hopefully their, you know, primary care provider or physician.
It's a changing world. Nancy in Cedar Bluffs, Nebraska. Thanks for calling, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What's your story?
Well, my doctor sent me to Walgreens.
Why?
Because I wanted a shingles vaccination, and he knew that I had a very high deductible health care plan. So he said, if you go there, you'll avoid the office fees, and the medicine will be cheaper.
What, may I ask what your deductible is, Nancy? Do you mind?
$10,000.
Oh, the sky's the, like, to the heavens.
Yes.
And so your doctor actually sent you to Walgreens to get the shingles shot there. Nancy, thank you for sharing that. Jason Wong, I mean, that sounds like disruptive innovation.
Yeah, so there needs to be changes on the payment side to get people to shop for some of their healthcare services like we do for other things. One analogy I often use is when an insured patient starts looking for healthcare services, it's a lot like looking for car services when you're still under warranty. If you're not really paying anything out of pocket, you might as well take it to the expensive dealership to get your car serviced. On the other hand, if you're paying it for yourself and you're out of warranty, well, you might consider using a local shop that charges less and is more convenient.
I mean, and when the insurance doesn't kick in until $10,000, that sounds, I mean, that's almost criminal, but that's been our country's situation on healthcare. Nancy, thank you for your call. Jason Wong, Teen Hansen-Turton, Dr. Reed Blackwelder, please stand by. We're talking about big retailers moving into healthcare services. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about big retailers, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, more moving into healthcare services delivery and what that may mean for American healthcare. They're pushing. Here's a Walmart ad from Fairmont, Minnesota.
There's nothing more important than the health and wellness of your family. That's why families enjoy the convenience of the clinic at Walmart, operated by Mayo Clinic Health System and located in the Fairmont Walmart just north of I-90. We provide fast, affordable access to many healthcare services, including immunizations and screenings. No appointment is needed. For more information, call or log on to mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Receive quality care without the long wait. Affordable, convenient, the clinic at Walmart.
Your healthcare services at Walmart, just north of I-90. Jason Wong is with us, co-founder and chief medical officer at Polkadoc today. Joins us from Stanford, California. He's been watching all this, author of Innovator's Prescription. Dr. Reed Blackwelder is here, president of the American Academy of Family Physicians. They have some significant misgivings about this trend. And Teen Hansen Turton is with us from Philadelphia, executive director of the Convenient Care Association, which has some of these retailers as its members. Comments here from our listeners. It's interesting. Jeremy says, I already see a nurse practitioner when I visit my general practitioner. I see a doctor only on rare occasions. Scott says this move to retail healthcare services could potentially save billions of dollars, both for the government and people if done right. But Max says, it seems like a conflict of interest to sell you diabetes treatment, then sell you 99-cent 2-liter bottles of Mountain Dew and Snickers on the way out. Teen Hansen Turton, what about that? You're not going to go to a doctor's office and be tempted to buy a whole lot of stuff that may be actually detrimental to your health. Is there a built-in contradiction in your retailers?
Well, I think the important thing is that what consumers are saying is that they're already using pharmacies for, you know, most of their medical needs. They may also be using them for other consumer needs. But it's not like other countries where we have seen and continue to see that really these pharmacies or also pharmacies and supermarkets where, you know, which is also another growing trend in this movement, have become critical access point in this country. So whether you talk to your local pharmacist for your prescription or medication advice or seeing your local nurse practitioner for minor illness, it is really, you know, becoming a trend in terms of how people are, you know, getting their care.
So the Mountain Dew is going to be there whether you go for services or not. If you go to pick up your prescription, it's there.
And if you go, you know, you will still go there to, you know, whether you go to your family physician or a hospital, you most likely will still have to pick up your prescriptions there anyways because these are located in pharmacies or in supermarkets with pharmacies. So that temptation will always be there, whether you're going for care there or somewhere else, as long as you're picking up your prescription in those places.
Dr. Blackwelder, you must feel the competition that's here. And maybe, I mean, Jason Wong and others have written that this is welcome competition, that our traditional healthcare service structure has not been efficient enough. It hasn't evolved rapidly enough. And it's not serving the country well enough. It's costing too much, drowning us in cost. What do you think is going to out here? Will the retailers gradually up their game and eat away more of the kind of work that you and your colleagues have done? Or will the traditional healthcare systems in this country get their act together and win? Or something else.
The reality is this is not competition. Ultimately, we should all have the same motivation of improving health care. Fragmented care decreases patient outcomes and increases cost. And just having access to care, for example, like emergency rooms, doesn't mean that you're going to get the coordination of care that you need. There's some real barriers right now with our whole system, and this involves the payment process as well as access points, and that patients do have high copays, and those copays are paid anywhere. And what one fear I have is that patients will tend to go to different access points to address acute issues, which are appropriately managed by protocol-based decision trees. But because of the copays and because of the challenges of accessing the other parts of the system, they won't get the comprehensiveness of care. And the reality is that chronic issues are much more complex. You know, we treat people, which you really can't manage by a protocol. This is really an important shift we all have to work toward as we look at the team-based approach. But I guess the other point I wanted to make is that all of these models are still not addressing the needs mm-hmm. of our neediest patients. I mean, again, disruptive technology often comes as an access for folks who don't have traditional care. And that has shifted, as Jason has said in some of his articles, that we're still missing those patients who don't have insurance, don't have adequate coverage, they don't have an easy way in except to show up ultimately in emergency rooms getting the wrong care, wrong place, wrong time. So all of these different pieces are part of that transition to right care, right place, right person, right time, and we should all be working together to make that happen.
Yeah, we've waited a long time for all that to work out. Teresa in Hartford, Connecticut. Teresa, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just wanted to speak to the MinuteClinic. I'm a practitioner there, and I heard some talk about the continuity of care, and I just wanted to let you know, everything's an electronic medical record, and if patients don't have a primary care provider, we do provide them with a list in the area, and also if they do have a primary care provider, we send a copy of that visit there because it is important for that continuity of care. And also, I just wanted to talk to the evidence-based practice. I'm a retired nurse in the VA system,
yeah.
And evidence-based practice, this is how we should be modeling our care. When I have patients come in to see me in the MinuteClinic, they'll come in frequently with bronchitis and say, my doctor always gives me a Z-Pak or an antibiotic.
Okay.
90% of these are viral cases, and they don't need any antibiotics. So it's really taking that extra time to inform our consumers how antibiotics are just going to lead down to the path of resistance. You don't need it now. It's just symptomatic. You'll go through it. So there is a lot of education that's happening right in that, 15-minute visit. And we always follow up with any of our sick visits with a 2-day follow-up phone call to make sure that the patient is getting better. If they don't feel that they are, we do refer them to tell them to follow up with their primary care provider.
Teresa, you're right there in the thick of it. I mean, I have to say it sounds like competition to me, but Dr. Blackwelder knows better, no doubt. Jane in Nashville, Tennessee. Jane, you're on the air.
Hi, it's June.
Hi.
And I was calling about two issues. One is the fee transparency. I go to a physician that is associated with a large medical center here, and I never have any idea what anything is going to cost. No one can tell you when they call ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm billed, there are numerous billing errors. So I've recently changed to a health care plan where I don't have a copay. I'll be paying everything up front until I reach my deductible. And I love knowing exactly how much I'm going to pay, and that's one big advantage of the clinic. And the other is the continuity of care. I don't get continuity of care at my regular doctor's office. They have my records. They don't look at them. No one looks at your records before you walk in. They scan them. And they have lost my records. They have inaccurate records. And I don't think this is a bad medical center. I think this is just a problem that's larger than that.
Yeah, June, we've got it. And I know many people have had that experience. Can work lots of ways. I mean, this is so interesting. I have a ton of respect for sophisticated medical education and care, Jason Wong, and yet a lot of people's direct experience has been suboptimal. Ultimately, how do you look at these retail newcomers? Are these barbarians at the gate, Jason? Are they saviors? Will they encourage some kind of better, more rapid evolution to efficiency and effectiveness in our healthcare delivery?
The bottom line to me is that they offer consumers choice. By bringing affordability and convenience, they bring yet another option to the table for where you can get your care. And we've seen similar things happen in the world of tax accounting, where you can do taxes on your own using software, or you can hire an accountant. Travel agents, you can book your own travel online, or you can still call a travel agent if you want. Same with stockbrokers, same with realtors. Disruption is going to affect healthcare in many similar ways.
Is it really going to take off if regulations hold it down? And of course, we know, established healthcare deliverers have a lot of sway over healthcare regulation.
Absolutely. And it's certainly hindered retail clinics in their growth trajectory. But at the same time, regulations will ultimately adapt to changes in the marketplace and what consumers really want. As long as it doesn't jeopardize their safety and good quality care, I think those regulations in time will have to change to accommodate these retail clinics and the demand in the marketplace.
Would you go to Walmart for your health care, Dr. Wong?
Absolutely. If it meant that I could see a clinician earlier.
That's it? You got a problem and Walmart's fine for you if you can just zip right in? What if it's, something? I mean, it's hard to know exactly what is indicated by a particular pain or ache.
So I think it's important for retail clinics when treating patients to also recognize when a patient is not appropriate for their services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of that responsibility is placed on the patient, but just like we've seen in those other industries I just listed, consumers are actually quite intelligent when determining what is the most appropriate setting to get their services from.
Fascinating area of change, catalytic change maybe, in American healthcare. Dr. Jason Wong, co-founder of Polkadoc, author of Innovator's Prescription, with us from Stanford, California. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Wong.
Thank you.
Dr. Reed Blackwelder, President of the American Academy of Family Physicians, thanks so much for your insights today, Dr. Blackwelder.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And Teen Hansen-Turton in Philadelphia, Executive Director of Convenient Care Association. Teen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
In a moment, we will look at one tech startup's plan to remake American health insurance. This is On Point. Over 10,000 New Yorkers are now insured through a very young tech health insurance startup called Oscar. The New York Times calls Oscar Silicon Alley's challenge to the staid business of health insurance. It's looking to remake the patient's healthcare experience with online support. Here's a little bit from one of their ads bragging on that.
Health insurance. We never liked it either. That's why we started Oscar, to make healthcare simple, intuitive, and technology-driven. We're Oscar, a new kind of health insurance company.
Okay, it's easy to make claims in an ad with nice music behind it, but let's see what they're up to. Joining me now from New York is a co-founder of Oscar, Kevin Nazimi. He used to work for Microsoft. Kevin Nazimi, welcome to On Point.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you, Tom.
So what are you up to? What are you offering that a traditional health insurance plan would not?
Well, you know, we're a group of technology entrepreneurs who, like many people who just called into your show, were frustrated by the healthcare experience we face and confused by the lack of a consumer to be treated as a consumer. So we decided to do something about it and built a health insurer here in New York from the ground up using technology, design, and data to make the experience simpler and a lot more transparent for people.
I read that, but I don't really get what it means.
Sure. What it means is that if you're a consumer, at first you actually understand what your benefits are. You know what you're entitled to and what you get for the monthly payment that you make. We help navigate you through the system so that if you're making the choice to say go to a local Walgreens clinic or a doctor on the other side of the street, you know the price difference between the choices that are there. And then lastly, you have us there like a doctor in the family. So with a push of a button with Oscar, you have a New York-based, board-certified doctor able to return your call within 30 minutes and even prescribe basic medication over the phone. So it really, for the consumer, it moves away from this transaction engine that's there, distant from them, there to serve the HR department, to a company that's a healthcare partner there to help them through what is a confusing landscape to navigate.
So you're a health insurance company, but you're actually providing me with a doctor and medical advice?
So among other things, what we do is shine light on the choices that are available to people. We don't give advice in terms of what to do. We help simplify and shine light on the choices that are available so the consumer can make much more informed decisions.
But you're connecting me to the doctor by telephone who's going to prescribe or advise.
Absolutely. Just as, you know, in the old world, a directory would connect you to a doctor, you know, on the corner of Fifth Avenue to prescribe prescriptions to you as well.
And you say you're going to tell me what's covered and what's not. Presumably, I can find that out now with my current traditional insurance.
You know, we tried that and we got a headache, you know, trying to do it today. It's really, really tough to do that in today's world with current insurance carriers. And what we wanted to do was take the friction out of that process. So with a simple mouse click or a phone call, you could get a good, decent sense of the choices and what it would cost you to go to a primary care doctor, a pulmonologist, or in our case, all our plans include the unlimited ability to have a doctor call you. So those are free.
Now, you can tell me what you cover or what you would pay on a given service, I guess, but you can't necessarily tell me what the doctor is going to charge, right? So I've still got an element of mystery there.
Sure. We can give you a lot more clarity than exists today because as the insurer, we ultimately pay the bill. And so we have a history of claims that can give you a good idea about what it would cost for someone who went in with your symptoms into a primary care doctor or a pulmonologist or whatever specialist you're going to see and give you an idea. Because we think that it's a false choice being presented to consumers that, oh my gosh, it's so confusing and so hard and you don't know anything, so we won't give you anything at all. We can give you a pretty dang good idea of the difference between what it will cost you to walk in for with a headache into a primary care doctor or walking into an emergency room. And you should know that
so,
as a consumer.
So you're high tech, you're online. You know, we've gotten savvy about that. Sometimes that's great. Other times that means I'm, you know, just sent to stare at the screen and try and figure out some terrible tangle.
Well, what we do is for every online click and engagement piece that we have a parallel ability to engage us offline with a telephone call. And so that is the constant thing that we wake up to do every day, which is build a consumer experience such that the friction to engage us online is so seamless that consumers benefit from it and engage it. And that's the test. And what we found is over 15,000 New Yorkers so far have signed up for Oscar, and 5 to 10% of our member base is engaging online every single day, and over 90% of them have created online accounts.
Hey, Kevin, if you succeed, who do you displace, and how do you change the healthcare experience?
Well, first, I think we displace a lot of Tylenol, which people are taking from the headache they get for navigating the system today. We think there's room for us. That's not what folks on terms of displacement. We think there's room for a lot of consumer-driven healthcare companies. You know, we're starting here in New York, but our focus is not on displacing people, but changing the overall industry for the consumer. And our hope is that everybody starts from the lens of the consumer.
All kinds of ferment out there. Kevin Nazemi trying to bring a dose of it to health insurance with his young company, Oscar. Kevin, good luck to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much, Tom.
In this hour tomorrow, we're going to be looking at the inside dope on college financial aid, the way it really works, who gets what, and how. On Point is produced by Emily Alphen Johnson, Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell. With help from Claire Lancaster and Sarah Platt, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.